Okay, it's Wayne Ranney again, and we're here on September the 2nd at the Embassy Suites Biltmore down here in Phoenix, having a wonderful time talking with Mike Buchheit, former director of the Grand Canyon Field Institute, but just an all-round great guy. And Mike, we've talked about a lot of things already. We've already spoken that we're going to be coming back and doing more at a later time, but you know, for me, that the days of the Grand Canyon Field Institute, and really, it's shocking that we're talking about it in the past, because it was just yesterday that this whole vibe was going on. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to experience it for 21 years under your tutelage and Jack's tutelage. And I just thought maybe you could talk a little bit about all of the wonderful people you worked with, the guides, the backpacking trips, the river trips. I mean, it's all you, Mike, whatever you want to talk about regarding that.
All right, I'll try to do it justice. If you can imagine a recovering claims adjuster bagging his dream job on the south rim of the Grand Canyon with limited natural and cultural history background, zero nonprofit experience.
Limited means you have some. It sounds like you showed up with nothing.
The things I didn't know history could fill volumes. Yeah, I remember hiking hundreds of miles in the canyon before I knew a piece of schist from a hole in the wall. Okay. So to say that anything I accomplished was standing on the shoulders of giants, That's a tired phrase, but it was on the job learning and training. And I have all the people that have devoted their careers and their lives to the canyon, like Wayne and many other. We've named a few already.
Yeah.
And it's a very long list. But yeah, to come to the park and never have worked for a nonprofit before. So how does this work? Oh, okay. I think I got it. To never have worked with the federal government before. How does this work? Oh, okay. The whole phrase "serve at their pleasure" was new to me,
yeah.
and not always applicable, but it was. It was an interesting, a serpentine and interesting and trial and error kind of situation. But my time in the field with Wayne and his cadre were the peak experiences in my life. And another one was Ken Walters. So Ken, I think I mentioned him as a charter instructor at the outset. And he came on teaching photography classes, but he quickly demonstrated his chops in the backcountry.
Yeah.
So it was really after I took over the directorship that he wrapped my head around a whole different genre of classes that the Park Service would sign off on. They had to agree to everything that we did.
Yeah.
And these were, we billed them as wilderness skills studies classes. So it was largely off trail. No technical climbing, but the occasional belay.
Yeah.
And,
Ken liked those kind of
things. Yeah, it was kind of out there stuff.
That was actually what he was responsible for with the Field Institute.
Yeah, and he was a protege, like many, of Harvey Butchart, who really put Grand Canyon backcountry hiking on the map. Ken, I don't know if he was a math student for Harvey, but
you know, he at least could have been.
Yeah. So Harvey was by day a mathematics professor at Northern Arizona University, and by weekend he was exploring Grand Canyon and re-pioneering any number of trails and summits. And what a guy. In fact, another top five, a slight detour, Ken arranged an interview on my part with Harvey Butchart, retired in Sun City. And that was an afternoon to remember.
Like a recording session?
I recorded it.
Or just to sit down?
Dictaphone. And yeah, nothing, pre-iPhone.
Yeah.
But it was time well spent. And so Ken Ken did the ugly, well, not the ugliest, one of the ugliest backpacks we ever did, which was a Nankweep to Bright Angel, 10-day hard ass over this, around that kind of hike, largely off trail. And I was the second in command, loosely defined. And so we had never done anything like that. So he's like, and I sure as hell had it. And we're like, well, who's going to sign up for this?
Got to sell the damn.
And I said, with my marketing hat on, I'm like, well, let's reach out to the 8 or 9 people that did the last toughest hike we've ever done, which had been a Bass to Hermit hike with Larry Stevens, all on trails.
Yeah.
Apples and not even oranges.
Yeah.
Apples and
pigs.
And pigs. So we turned it into an invitational. Now that the statute of limitations has passed, I can share this. So I just started working the phone. I called everybody who was on that hike. I'm like, we got something pretty nasty brewing, and if you want to, you know, we'd love to have you join it. And 5, 6, 7 of those people signed up for it. And then a few other crazy people. Actually, we overbooked it. The Park Service allowed us to go over the permit of 11. I think we had 12.
Wow.
I'm not sure how we packaged that. So we checked packs in Kolb Studio, our office at the time, jumped in a van, drove around to the north side of the canyon, spent the night at the Saddle Mountain trailhead on the Forest Service land in House Rock Valley, the outer edges of House Rock Valley. And got up the next day, said goodbye to the van. Bill Bloom, shout out to Bill Bloom in South Rim Travel. I think he's in Tucson now. So off we went, and we got up to the saddle at the Coconino Saddle on the Nankweep, where technically it goes to Grand Canyon National Park from...
That's the boundary.
From Coconino National Forest,
Kaibab.
Kaibab National Forest. I had to hike one woman back just because it wasn't working for her. She was having a bad day. So now we're down to 11. So we're legally permitted at this point. So off we go, and we get down to Nankweep. This was technically an orienteering class. So the vision was that, so this would have been 97, April. The vision was every morning we'd pick a destination and we'd break up into teams of three, and we'd do compass readings and look at our topo maps, and we'd all meet after a fun day, you know, just before dinner, and regale each other with stories. That lasted about nothing. So there were some people that were pretty beat up at Nankweep Creek just coming down the trail.
Ugh.
So the next day, we were supposed to get to, we took the Butte Fault, you know, which was lightly watered. It was like a historically dry April, hot as Hades. So we flew two guys out on the Abitibi Crest.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and that was a whole thing because... our destination was the Nankweep Saddle. And so when did we get to... Yeah. So we called the part... We had an air transceiver. We didn't have sat... This was pre-sat phones, pre-internet, pre-everything. So on an air transceiver, we got a call out, which meant... air transceiver, or no, I'm sorry, control tower in Vegas, call to Grand Canyon, call to search and rescue apparatus on whatever information we could get out to a tour helicopter pilot on a almost an imperceptible line. So Ken said, and I'm here to, you know, they're like, what river mile are you at? They never get calls from people slugging it out, you know, over land. And Ken's like, we are not at on the river. Repeat that. And I don't know if they repeated it back. But we're at river mile 65, 5 miles up 65 Mile Canyon on the Butte Fault. They didn't hear any of that. So Ken looks at me and he's like, okay, you got to get everybody else up to the Nankweep Saddle. And you better get going. And I'll meet you up there. I'm going to stay back with these guys. This isn't even my story. So off we go. And it's bushwhacking in and out. And we get up there. And here comes the airship. Chukka, 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 chukka. And they land. And Chuck Cypher, shout out to Chuck, is in his flight suit. And he's like, you know, where are the evacuees? We looked on the river. I'm like, we said, I didn't even go into that. It was all I could do not to jump into the helicopter and say, good luck, people, because I knew Chuck, because I'm hurting too. And I'm like, they're on Ahwatobee Crest. He's like, oh. Because if they don't pick them up before the sun goes down, it's the highway patrol or nothing. And, so I'm like, can we get some water? Because we're out. And we got to dry camp that night. So he gave us a couple gallons and off he went. And they got those guys back to the clinic. Phil Flowers, 6'7", 240 pounds. He couldn't drink enough water. It was heat stuff. And the other guy, under hypnosis, I'd remember his name, but he didn't have the hiking. I approved him, but he didn't have the hiking resume to be on this hike. So I'm like, okay, folks, find a flat spot. We're spending the night here, then it's down to Carbon, the East Fork of Carbon. And, that's all the water we have to get to the East Fork of Carbon. So Ken shows up about 11 p.m., huff, puff, huff, puff. And, I'm sure I was doing something wrong by Ken's, even though I'm technically his boss. You know, why are people over there? We should all be over there. Anyway, we got through all that, and people ate and got a decent night's sleep, got down. Next day, over to, where did we get? How much time do we have? Because this is but I'll get to the Ken part.
Well, Lava Chuar or?
Okay, no. So we got down to East Fork, found some nasty water, did what we need to there. Yeah, we got down to Lava Chuar and spent the night there. Next day, Butte Fault again, up and over. We were on top. We had to come through the Tapetes to get into Basalt.
Yeah.
And we had to do a belay there, and we really got log jam. But we finally got, okay, here's a Ken story. What ranger was it? This is a little Ken Walters cat and mouse. Half of you are smiling. So we get down to Basalt, which was a harrowing descent, and we're having lunch, and a park service, I don't know if it was a patrol trip, but there was a ranger, river ranger, a ranger, who came up. Big. So he comes back. What are you guys up to? Oh, we're at the Field Institute. Where's your permit? Ken's like, on my pack. And Ken purposefully had like 20 permits on there and made him go through them all, and they came over. All right, where are you headed tonight? Unkar. Okay. Off they went. So we started to try to follow the river, to get to Unkar. Right. And we, at that river level, there was a big cliff sticking out into the river. And we had to either backtrack like a quarter mile to get over this thing or get in the water with full packs. And Ken and I took a little walk and pro con. And I'm like, you know, I think we got to backtrack. You know, I'm not comfortable putting everybody in the river. And we got back, and the decision had been made for us because one of our clients, was leaning on a homemade walking stick that was in the water with probably a 40-pound pack on. Snap, boosh. He's underwater. And he comes out, Jesus. You know, and he's already halfway around this thing. So we get everybody around it somehow. And so now we're marching to under a full moon at this point, trying to get to Unkar Delta. And there's some motor trip is camped river right between that spot. And I don't know who it was. I wish I could go back and hug the TL because they had just finished dinner. And they were having beer and chocolate cake. And they had formed a line on this social trail through their camp. And we didn't have time to stop and talk. And, you know, but they did the math. They didn't expect to see backpackers on River Right. And so it was cake on the right, beer on the left. And it was like being on a 10K run. We're just Tecate and just the worst chocolate cake, but it tasted pretty good. So we get everybody we spent a night at Unkar, camped in the drainage just so we weren't stomping on anything, any arc sites. So 2 days later, we're trying to get from, we're trying to get into Vishnu Creek from Asbestos Creek? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took all of the 3 gallons and the 2 nervous cadpoles on the 1 water hole we found there to get through the night. So we split into 2 groups. There were some people still trying to orienteer. Ken's like, we're going to go high and you guys can stay low. And we had this old codger from Farmington, New Mexico, Hank Taylor, who had never backpacked with the group before, but we had worked out the logistics and we had the permit. And we had already flown 2 people out. We're like, you just got to stay close. We need you. I took him aside. I'm like, I can't be worried about you 2 miles ahead. And he's like, well, whatever. So Ken is God knows where. And I've got these guys on the Tapetes Rim of Vishnu. We took the easy way. You know, had our lunch. He's like, I'm going to push on. I'm like, stay put, please. I'm going to move on. So he disappeared just slightly out of view. And we're just packing up. And I hear this, you know, just this hellacious, you know, rock fall. And I'm like, in a plume of dust. And I walk over there. And he's down at the bottom, standing. And I'm looking at this unstable slope. And he's like, do you have a first aid kit? And I'm like, stay where you are, are. And by then, my other peep showed up. And I'm like, you guys sit here. I got to go down there and deal with this. You know, just don't even look. Just stay here. I'll come back for you if I live. You know. And then I'm just hot footing it down this unstable slope. And I get down to him, and he's got his hand wrapped in a bandana, and it's soaked in blood. And I'm like, what happened? He's like, oh, I got caught in a rock slide. And I'm like, how's your hand look? He's like, I can't look at it or I'll pass out if I see my own blood. And I'm like, okay, look that way and unwrap your hand. I've got to assess the situation. So,
did you say you don't even have basic first aid?
No, I didn't say that, Wayne. Is it showing on my brow? So, So he's unwrapping his, what's left of his hand, which got, you know, ka-kunked by a big boulder. And he's tape, you know, rips it off, finger here, finger there, they're all on. Blood, sinew, you know.
Wow, he sliced it open.
It was bad news. And I'm like, but I had been telling myself, no matter how bad it is, I got to tell him, no problem, we can deal with this. This is a confession of short sorts, people. So I'm like, holy mother of Christ. What did you do to your hand? Is that a hand? You know, I'm just off the charts, freaking out. Here's where Ken comes in. I'm like, you know, So Ken comes marching down the drainage, throws me out of the way, which was the smartest thing he ever did. Grabs his hand, you know, does the best job he can, rinse it with the cleanest water we had. You know, first aid kit out, Betadine, 10% Betadine solution, and a big Ziploc, snips it off, spraying it like a syringe, gets all the gravel out of there and God knows what else, wraps it up, makes it look like a hand again, puts him in the shade, and he comes over. You know, by then my people are roasting in the sun, so they're making their way down the cliff, and I go up a little ways and help them down. So the rest of the trip, that guy should have been probably helicoptered.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to go. And it was his strong hand.
He soldiered on.
He soldiered on for, you know, we were 2 days from Clear Creek, yeah. First time we'd see a trail again. So my job every morning was to find him a bite stick for Ken to redress his hand.
Wow.
And we got him out. Yeah.
But well, it sounds like this hike made quite an impression on you. It was early in your career.
We revisited our risk, our screening and risk management protocols, so we learned a lot on that trip.
Yeah,
Your Honor. And but yeah, that we bit off a lot more than we could chew.
Well, listening to that story, it makes me feel better about when I turned down that hike just about 5 years ago.
Okay.
Before my knee replacement, immediately before.
Oh, my God.
And I said, you know, I got to be realistic. I can't do this.
It's funny, though. It was hit or miss. I got through it without a blister.
Yeah, well, at least you did it.
Yeah. But just a little epilogue. So pretty much at the end of my Grand Canyon tenure, which we'll get to later, I had heard that Hank had had a few surgeries and was, you know, never did get full range of motion on his hand.
Oh.
But his girlfriend, de jure, showed up. She didn't identify herself as such right away, but she came into my office at the old hospital on the South Rim, and she put a big bag of dust down on my desk, and she said, there's a Wayne Ranning tie-in here. You'll have to wait for it. And I'm like, how you doing? Hi, I'm Caroline. Oh, nice to meet you. Where are you from? Farmington, New Mexico. I'm like, really? Yeah. I know a guy from Farmington.
I nursed a guy from Farmington.
And she said, he's on your desk.
Oh, no.
Touche. I'm like, what? She's like, that's Hank Taylor. And I promised his kids I'd honor one of his dying wishes, that some of him will get sprinkled into the canyon.
But not necessarily the base of the Tapiz Ledge in Vishnu Creek.
Well, next best thing. So she said, and he told me to look you up. I'm like, I'm happy you did that, and let's talk about it. So I told her the whole story. But then I said, you're in luck, because I'm on a river trip in a week with one Wayne Ranney on a motor rig with plenty of room for a...
You didn't tell me you brought Hank on that trip. Did he pay his trip fee?
No, he didn't. Don't tell Ezra. Off we went, but I found a moment alone at the river's edge, and I piled him up on a piece of rock and videoed letting him loose, and it wasn't far from where he busted up his hand.
Nice.
So he got to come full circle. Yeah.
Well, Mike, this has been great. And as we both agree, we got to continue with this because there's many more stories. But just to finish up for the day, why don't I mention a few Fields Institute instructors' name and just tell me what comes to mind. This is not to flesh out your worst feelings about anybody.
Speed round.
Yeah, I mean.
And could I back up a big step backwards? I credit Ken, who's not hiking anymore.
Right.
With teaching me everything that I know about off-trail hiking.
Nice.
He's a guy who could come up and I could be whining about something and just have a quick conversation. And he'd say, by the way, your shoe's untied, you're a quart low on water. And, you know, he just had that court presence that you just can't teach.
There's no question Ken was one of the most capable and knowledgeable backcountry hikers.
And occasionally polarizing.
Well, he didn't have the best people skills. And I only went on one hike with him. And I will freely admit that I misbehaved on that hike. I brought a girlfriend and was all enamored with her and didn't listen to his rules on the trip.
Okay.
And I'm speaking specifically about when he mentioned don't bring alcohol on the trip, and I ended up bringing some beers down the trail.
Yeah.
That's another story for my personal thing. But okay.
We'll circle back to Ken.
We'll circle back to Ken another time. Exactly. He's not doing well, and we wish him the best. But another Field Institute all-star, Denise Traver.
What can you say? Okay, another poet warrior.
She worked there a long time.
She was a backcountry ranger, correct? In your day, wasn't she?
I never knew her as a ranger, but I think she must have been.
Okay. I know she was stationed at Cottonwood off and on.
Yes, that's right.
That experience led her to, she saw enough male couples hiking through where the guy was just time obsessed and driving the female so hard that she wasn't enjoying herself and would ultimately swear off backpacking for life once they got to the South Rim. Denise said, let's do a women's only subset of backcountry classes and let me teach them the wonders of Grand Canyon on a slower pace and with a female appreciation for this place. And they were wildly popular. And
it sounds crazy now in 2022, but that was something that had to be invented and envisioned. And
she was a pioneer in that. Because a lot of people benchmarked off our program, and I'm sure her ripple effect was far and wide on that.
Sally Underwood.
Sally started as a client and a fellow hiker, and a real Field Institute groupie and a student of the canyon, and started the old-fashioned way. She would be the second in command on a few far-flung backpacks, and clients loved her. We loved her.
Yep.
Showed up on time, prepared, got it done.
Did some great hikes.
Did some fantastic hikes.
Phantom Creek and then across the Tapetes to Cottonwood.
Yeah, she had some.
On the west side.
Right, on the west, the cattle trail.
The cattle trail.
I got a call from her during high water and had to help try to figure it out from the south.
You may not remember, she took my geology classes in Prescott.
Oh.
When she was just transitioning from being a vet to a trail guide.
Oh, perfect. Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, she would agree. She was, you know, guided on the shoulders of giants and became a giant herself. And she's in Prescott now and an avid yoga instructor, I believe, and on to other things.
I admire those two women because they knew when to quit. And they both went cold turkey on the trail guiding.
With a few exceptions, with my salesmanship, I was able to lure
Of course.
Both of them back a time or two.
You silver-tongued devil.
Where clients were insisting. So they were strategic.
Got a special request, Sally.
Strategic opportunities, both of them, yeah.
I can't think of his last name now, but Rich.
Rich Holtzen.
Holtzen.
Rich Holtzen.
A funny guy like you.
Quick on the one-liners. Wide-ranging background. Actually, a PhD in musicology. Yeah. A lot of people didn't know that. But a hardworking guy that started doing a lot of rim stuff for me, which was really our strong suit in more recent years. We put a lot of eggs in that basket. And then he'd got some backpacks under his belt too, often in the corridor.